Welcome to the Surviving Grief Podcast, hosted by our grief ministry leaders at Crossroads Church. We'll be sitting down with friends as they share their powerful stories of loss and healing, and we'll hear from grief professionals and other wise people with useful tools for our own time of grief. If you're supporting someone who's grieving, you'll learn how to comfort them and walk with them on their own path to healing. Let's join the conversation.
Welcome to another episode of Surviving Grief. I'm one of your hosts, Megs Gelfgott, and
Kelly Mayer.
We're so glad that you are here today. We are going to be talking about loneliness, that quiet ache that can follow loss, and all kinds of loss, not just bereavement. It's normal to feel isolated and unseen, but even in our loneliest moments, God is right there. He's with us. And so today we're exploring those feelings, we're putting name to them, and we're talking about tools and resources to move forward, to not exist and stay in that place. I'm going to open this up with a verse, Deuteronomy 31:6. The Lord himself goes before you and will be with you. He will never leave you or forsake you. And you might be listening to this podcast and rolling your eyes as you hear that verse. And you're like, I'm in the midst of a storm like you wouldn't imagine. I could not be more alone. I lost my partner. I lost my parent. I lost my child. The life that I knew looks different. My friend groups look different. And loss takes a toll, not just on the orientation of our life, but in how we show up in it, or the amount of emotions that we're struggling with, the identity piece, and our relationship with God can be strained, to put it lightly. And so today, as we navigate this world of loneliness, the goal is to find God's presence in the silence.
And not to allow the silence to alienate us or to make us convinced that God is too far. He can't understand my loss, my alone feeling. And typically, if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you know that we usually speak only about bereavement. But in this episode, we're going to also touch on some other types of grief. Disenfranchised grief, which is the kind of grief that society doesn't typically acknowledge, and usually that happens after divorce, which is a very specific type of loss. Also, the Lord is with us in any kind of loss. But today we're going to widen our view a little bit more to address loneliness and what we can do to bring God's presence into that open place in our life.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when we want to start by really kind of diving a little deeper into loneliness, because it's such like a big emotion, it's a big feeling. And let's get crystal clear that loneliness in grief, it's part of the human experience. It is not a sign of weak faith, but something that God can meet in that silence. And so, you know, I want to kind of absolve you of any guilt or any shame around, you know, you're not seeing your friends or you're having trouble getting out of bed. Loneliness takes on all kinds of forms, physically, emotionally, behaviorally, cognitively. Like, there's just such a toll that happens to us. And so that's why it's really important to start with, what does loneliness in grief look like?
And in the grief group that we run at Crossroads, we talk about the stages of grief. And one of the stages of grief is called retreat. And it is a time when we naturally, after our loss has occurred, the shock has worn off, the reality of our situation is settled in. And the third stage after shock and reality is retreat. And it's this natural time where we pull back a little bit. Our community has changed. Offers of help have changed. The world has gone on. That's how it feels. And there is a natural inclination to pull away. And that's not wrong. There is an introspection and a quietness to grief where we can really feel the Lord's presence. So this is not a negative time. The silence and loneliness can be what we might have defined as loneliness in the past before our loss can actually become solitude. And there's a big difference between feeling lonely and operating in a space of solitude. Solitude doesn't mean complacency. It means stillness. It means you singularly being in a place of quiet in your soul and in your spirit.
Absolutely. And in Psalm 25:16, it says, "Turn to me and be gracious to me, for I am lonely and afflicted." You know, God has such a unique way of showing up in the most unexpected ways when we are in this lonely phase. You know, at its most basic fundamental level, grief can make us feel as though no one really understands what we're going through. To put it simply, you know, just talking about friend groups around you, if they've never lost somebody close to them, you know, they can empathize, they can feel awful, they can want to show up, but they don't understand the layers of loss, all the intricacies that are woven up in that. And so even in a crowd, we might feel isolated. So recognizing that loneliness is part of the process, right? We got to give a name to it before we can look to get help, right? Before we can turn to God and invite him into that process.
And then you may be the only person in your family who's ever been through a divorce. I personally haven't experienced divorce, but the loss, the significance, the identity shift, it's a very, very, very deep loss. And you might be the only one in your family. Your family may not be, you know, helpful and supportive in that time. You may be the only one in your friend group. You know, there's an experiential piece of going through something that your other community hasn't gone through that can feel very, very isolating. And I think the promises of God not to leave us or forsake us, but also to set us in family, like he sets the lonely in families. And families in the family of God are spiritual families, not necessarily our blood family. So we can take solace in Psalm 68:6 that says that God sets the lonely in families.
Lonely is this kind of large word that means so many different emotions. In previous episodes, we've talked about the emotion wheel. If you've never looked at it, I highly recommend Googling it. It's a circle or a wheel, and it's going to have three layers to it. So it takes really common emotions like anger, sadness, happy, and then it gives you two more layers of words to understand how that emotion is showing up for you. So when we take an emotion like sad, lonely would fall below that. That's the same thing as despair and guilty and depressed. And when we take that a little further with that next layer, is it feeling isolated? Is it feeling abandoned or fragile or victimized? And so as we progress through what loneliness looks like, I want you to just take a moment and think about in the last week, in the last month, what is one circumstance that comes to mind where you have felt your most lonely? Is this at home and everybody else is out celebrating? You know, they're doing something fun after work and you just had no interest in it. Is it someone who's, they had a baby shower and you just lost a baby and you don't feel ready to go to that? A couple's dinner with all these friends that you normally go to. There's just endless ways that circumstantial loneliness shows up. And so I want you to just take some time and even just jot it down in a notebook and try to identify what about that situation was bubbling up to the surface for you. Were you angry that you weren't able to be there? Did you have guilt? Did you have shame? Did you have despair? And starting to give better, more strategic words to those emotions.
You're right, and to the specific circumstances, because what could be lonely and isolating to one person could feel like a relief to others. And it, you know, sometimes the loneliness feeling when you're grieving catches you by surprise. Like I'm literally sitting here in the midst of 50 people, but I feel completely alone. Or I'm sitting here alone and I don't feel lonely at all. It can be very complex. And it also depends on your wiring. Are you an introvert or an extrovert? Are you used to being around a large group of people? Did you and your spouse do everything together, or did you have different interests? There's so many different elements that contribute to a feeling of loneliness or not after loss. A lot of it has to do with expectations. We have very high expectations of how we think our life is going to go. And when those expectations are shifted because of loss, that can be the slippery slope into loneliness.
Let's talk about the first component of loneliness, which is the most obvious, isolation, right? You're physically not with other people. And the danger with isolation is that as we withdraw into our loneliness, we risk carrying grief, not only alone, but losing perspective. Perspective is not necessarily reality. Depending on where you're sitting from, the view looks differently, but that may not be kind of the truth of what the reality is. So God calls us to remain connected in community, connected to Him and to others who can really kind of support and walk with us through that loneliness process. Listen, friends, loneliness is real, but it doesn't have to define our journey. And we are fundamentally built to be in community. The worst thing that you can do to someone from a psychological standpoint is remove them from community. It doesn't matter how hardened they are or how much of a quote lone wolf they are. That is one of the worst things that you can do to a person psychologically. You need people.
And we also have expectations of what's going to happen when I'm with someone. And the beauty of if you're walking with someone in grief is it doesn't have to be activity-based. Presence is power. Simply being next to someone, just sitting there, allowing your presence to be felt is usually the only thing that people need at some period of that retreat stage. Just going. And I think we know, we all have friends who've been grieving. We've been grieving. We know how significant that is. Just showing up. No agenda. Doesn't have to be a party or a planned activity or let's get you out of the house. Sometimes you need to stay in the house and just sit on the couch. Do nothing. Just be like a dog. Just sit there and bank up against them like your Labrador retriever, because that presence is what is so comforting.
Yeah. If you are supporting somebody in grief, you know, there's a great video that we always play within the healing groups called The Mourning Booth, mourning, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G. And it details the power of physically showing up for someone. When we have a close friend, loved one who is in a grieving stage, we want to fix it. How do I fix this? How do I make sure that you feel loved? And if I've never experienced deep loss before, I'm kind of like shooting in the dark of what I think that you need. And a lot of times the person who is grieving, I know this was my experience, cannot articulate what they need. You know, they're getting bombarded with text messages and phone calls and people kind of in their face saying, what do you need? What do you need? How can I help? What do you need? And they're already in such an overwhelmed state that that actually can make things worse. And what I love about that video, The Mourning Booth, is it shows the power of just sitting and being with them. You don't have to fix it. Your physical presence, that support, that community, even though you're not talking, there is so much power there. And so for the individual who is in the grieving position and you feel like you don't even know where to start, because when you're with other family or friends, they're saying things you don't want to hear. It's, you know, they're not being helpful. You're not ready. It's draining to you. I would encourage you to write a letter, something where you don't necessarily have to say it to their face, but just take some time and think about what does support look like to you right now? Because a lot of times they're guessing and you might feel overwhelmed in the moment and it's worth 5 to 10 minutes of your time. What does support look like for me?
Yes. And to your point about people just showing up, a lot of times when we're supporting someone, we want the uncomfortable feeling to go away ourselves. That is, so it is a very self-sacrificial act to simply sit. And it's challenging. And so we just want to challenge you. If you're walking with someone in grief, lay down the agenda. Don't expect them to do anything. Just sit there. And to the point about the letter, that's one of the practices that we follow in the grief group. There's a model that our fearless leader who created this grief group many years ago, Kathy Beecham, wrote a letter, actually used the letter that she literally sent to her friends and family, just saying, hey, I've lost Pete. Sometimes I'm going to cry unexpectedly when you're around. I'm okay. Just pray for me. And if I don't call you back, call me again. I don't really know what I need right now, so I'm going to kind of need you to help me out. You've been through this before. If you have, you know probably what I need. Just go ahead and do something, but don't ask me because I don't know. Mm-hmm. And then she expresses her faith and she trusts God. But it's just such a poignant way to say to people, I don't know what I need yet, but don't leave me alone.
Mm-hmm.
The underlying message in that letter is don't leave me alone.
Mm-hmm. This whole concept of the danger of isolation, sometimes it is a natural consequence of the loss itself. You lost your spouse, and now there's nobody at the house with you. If you are in a divorce situation, you may have lost friends in the process or close family members or what have you. And so there is a natural isolation that can happen simply as a result of the grief itself. And if you are currently in a situation where you're like, I would love for someone to physically just show up for me and sit with me, I don't have that person. Here's what I would encourage you to do with that. Take a first step. Take a first step because, you know, it's a whole big world out there and you may not have a person now, but, you know, here at Crossroads, we have listening appointments.
Mm-hmm. Talk appointments.
Talk appointments. Mm-hmm. Reach out to somebody.
Because someone has made you an offer. If you think back on the people that have gotten in touch with you to express their condolences, and they have made an offer. Unfortunately, many times that's let me know what you need. But sometimes people are very specific. Hey, can I pick up groceries for you? Hey, can I pick your kids up from school? Think back on those offers and challenge yourself to say yes to one of them. It's really hard, especially in, again, we live in a first world by control environment where we're in control of everything. We are self-sufficient. We've got it all handled. In grief, we don't have it all handled. We need help. And so just saying yes to something simple and letting someone in and letting them carry the burden for you. Ecclesiastes 4:9-10 says, two are better than one. If one of them falls down, one can help the other up. This is God's heart for us, that we are never alone. The body of Christ is available to us. There are brothers and sisters in Christ who share our faith. Even people that don't share our faith are, you know, people that are your neighbors, your friends and family. You know, there are people around. You may feel isolated and lonely, but in reality, you may be surrounded by people who love you and want to help. They just don't know how.
Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with having boundaries. If going to that social Christmas party is not something that you can stomach, don't go. So it's okay to not just thrust yourself out into these social settings, but it's not settling into that identity of, I don't want to be around anybody. I'm going to figure this out my own. I don't have anybody. And so that's where the real kind of danger of the isolation and leaning into that can come from.
And from a brain science standpoint, we like to talk about that a lot. You know, as we're processing a loss, our brain is remapping our context. Our brain is processing, okay, there's a big shift. The person that we're used to having in our context isn't here. Your brain is actively remapping your experience, and that is exhausting. The danger of continual isolation is that the remapping doesn't include new community. And our brain is sometimes our friend and sometimes not. It's very automatic in many ways. And so if it is experiencing constant loss and constant isolation, that's the programming that's going to mm-hmm. be running in your mind. And that's not biblical. And the beauty of the way our brain is created is that it's so flexible and there's so much neuroplasticity. This isn't a rush, but there's also an awareness of, this is too much loneliness. This is too much isolation. And just preparing yourself to take that next step of how do I walk out of this? How do I walk out of a healthy time of solitude into a time of community that's right for how I am now? I'm different.
Mm-hmm. How do we experience God's presence when we're feeling forsaken, we're feeling abandoned, we're feeling disoriented in the throes of grief? The plans you have for your life, they're going to look different. You know, God doesn't just visit us when we're surrounded by people. He shows up and he meets us in the quiet, in the empty spaces of our hearts. And nothing produces an empty space in your heart like true grief. So even when we feel alone, you know, you're never truly alone. I don't care where your relationship with God is, like he's there. He's in the wings just waiting to give you a hug, and he is working for your good. Mm-hmm. You know, his spirit is with us and comforting and guiding us. And I have to tell you, you know, I had a faith in Jesus prior to the loss of my sister, but it evolved my faith in such an acute way because of the loneliness, because of the despair and the anger that came through grief. But it allowed me to experience him in such a deep, unique way where I felt loved and I felt comforted, and I saw him working in my life to bring community around me to meet me in like a really hard place.
He needs quiet. Mm. That's how he gets our attention. When we're busy and running around, and we tend to not have as much intimacy with God. But in the still quiet places, his voice is more, it just seems more amplified. It seems deeper when we're in that quiet place. And so making that kind of cognitive shift from I'm alone to I'm in solitude is a great place to experience his presence more. And we know we have promises. We have the Psalms. We have promises from God that even though we walk through the valley of the shadow of death, literally when you're grieving, the shadow of death has come over your life, we can trust in the fact that we have a good shepherd that's walking with us. We use Psalm 34, verse 18 as our fundamental scripture in the grief group, and that's the Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit. He doesn't come rushing in from 100 million miles away. He's always been there. What happens is that he makes himself known in the quiet and the isolation that's unique to grief. His presence is there. His presence is always with us because his spirit dwells within us. But there is something about being in that holy, somber place with God and grief, where the way he speaks to us and the way he comforts us is unique and different from any other time. And so we can trust in the promises of Scripture. Isaiah 43:2, when you pass through the waters, I will be with you. And through the rivers, they will not overwhelm you. That is that's a promise of being held by him. And that's really when we sense it the most is when we're in these pockets of quiet and stillness.
Mm. When just the end of that verse, they shall not overwhelm you. I think that even in relaying that to walking through the valley of the shadow of death, there is a fear that shows up when our life is out of control and nothing reminds you that you have no control than the death of a loved one, the death of a dream, the death of a relationship. And so when you relinquish control to God and know that he is guiding your footsteps, that he is working for your good, you can walk with confidence that, you know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what's coming. God is not going anywhere, and he will be with you no matter how turbulent the storms around you.
And he's always working for our good. Also, nothing can separate us from his love. And when we start to move from isolation to community, is really when we start seeing the kind of the supernatural hand of God moving in our lives. And this is a really, really incredibly intimate time with God because our identity is shifting. We have known ourselves a certain way through the relationship we had with our loved one that was lost. And now we're different. And so we begin to understand ourselves in a different way. You may now realize that, you know what, I always thought I was an extrovert, but there's been something about this quiet time that I really like. Maybe I'm not. Maybe I am more of an introvert. And that just means that it's not that you don't like people. It's where you get your energy from. Where do you recharge from? If you're an extrovert, you get recharged by being around people. If you're an introvert, you get recharged by being alone. It's that simple. It's not about not loving people. So there's a time in the time right before God begins to bring new community into your life where you have the opportunity to really do some interesting self-examination of like, God, who am I now? Before you take that next step. And he'll be gentle with you. He will reveal things to you and you'll learn things about yourself in grief that even though you don't want to, they are really profound. If you speak with people who have had a significant loss and have processed it well, and they're, you know, some time out from that loss, they will tell you how different they are. If you've known them for a long time, you will experience them as different. You know, because we are different after a loss. And it also helps us to evaluate the community that we're seeking after a loss. The grief group, sometimes the recommendation is counseling. Sometimes the recommendation is a new small group based on who you are now. Mm-hmm. If you were in a couples group and you lost your spouse, going back to that community, even though you love them and you have a lot in common with them, you still are going to be friends with them, but it may not be the type of community that's most supportive for you. We have people that form widow and widower groups going forward. It's not the definition of them forever, but in this transition time in their life, as they're understanding who I am now, that can be very comforting. You don't have to explain to yourself. It's the same after our divorce and beyond group. Many people form small groups, you know, hey, we get it. We're on the same child, visitation schedule. Let's walk this out together and then, you know, maybe take a next step in a different direction after that. But it's in that discernment period where God really starts to pour out his presence and starts to bring people your way. There are usually no coincidences. Mm-hmm. He will begin to bring people around you that you need, quite honestly, and who need you.
Yeah, and suffering, it can immediately make you feel more cut off from the world and isolated from friends. But the gospel is the antidote for that, right? Christ is going to enter into that solitude with you. And we've seen this with the people that we work with in Grief Group. I've seen this in my own life as well, that while suffering can make us more lonely, it can also drive us deeper into community. I chased community in a way that I never did before the loss of my sister because I was out of options. I was so beyond my means to fix this, to fix the pain that I feel like grief had bestowed on every facet of my life. And so once I went through the grief group and I experienced like the comfort of being around other people who simply got it, I was motivated. I was motivated to put in the work, because that's what it is to find community. I was motivated to find the work, to put in the work, to find other people who were going to encourage me, who were going to push me. And, you know, that when we're in that community, it actually helps diffuse some of the pain when you're building into other people, when you are supporting other people through their grief as well.
And it's a release of love. Grief is based on love. We don't grieve something that we didn't love. We don't grieve something that we didn't love. We grieve the people that we loved. And when we're grieving, when we've lost someone, we've lost an outlet through which love pours out of us. And so as we enter back into community, it fills, it's not going to be the same, but there is a human release of love that is needed for us to feel fulfilled. It's the way we're created in the image and likeness of God. He releases love all the time. That's how we're like him. And so when we seek community and we do the work and we try something and maybe it doesn't work and we try something else and we find that sweet spot, we find our people, there's a release of love that's critical, that's very, very, very healing.
If you are not a sharer when it comes to you and your feelings under the best of circumstances, and you certainly aren't fired up to share about here's all the hard things and how terrible I feel, you're not alone. That's most people, especially in adulthood, right? It's tough to make friends as an adult. And so whether you've just moved cities, whether you've lost friend groups, or you know, whatever the case may be, don't let that biography up to this point be the legacy of what continues, right? We can learn new skills. And this is coming from someone who was so anti-groups around grief. A year after my sister had passed away, the girlfriend of my husband's business partner, and I say that just to emphasize it was not a close friend, invited me to a grief group. And I gave the obligatory, okay, I'm going to go. I knew it was 8 weeks. And in my mind, I'm like, I'm going to go for one so that I can say I went. And it completely changed the trajectory of my grieving experience. When we talk about finding connection and support, you know, other people who have been through something similar, there is a commiserating, there is a wisdom, there is a holiness about being in community with those people and sharing those wounds. Oftentimes, you know, the phrase that we use to describe it is, you can tell someone who has also experienced deep loss, you can say, I'm having a really hard day. And they just intuitively get it on a different level than someone who's never experienced loss. They understand the grief attacks. They understand how pain and joy can coexist, how, you know, everybody else is moving forward. You may feel stuck. And so I say this as someone who was not fired up to share that when I did start talking about the loss of my sister and I did start talking about my journey, right? So many times our grief journey becomes about the person that we lost. And, you know, we want to talk about them, but this is about you and your journey and how you are moving through the process and how you are coming out on the other side. And so as I shared about my sister, there truly was a physical release, like you're relieving the pressure valve on a slow cooker for all my bakers out there. And I just felt like the temperature was dropping in all these other areas that had felt really stressful, really strenuous, where anger was running hot, where loneliness was maxing out. The more that I talked about these hard places that I were in, and I didn't have all the answers, you know, it all just kind of came flooding out at once. I was so resistant to talking about my grief that once I started, I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop crying. Awesome. And I couldn't just stop sharing about some of these things. And so while you may ostensibly think that you're not a sharer, give it a try.
You never know what might happen. Yeah. You might end up in a small group that you're a part of for the next 10 years. Because God, that's what God does. He puts the lonely in families. He really does. There's a supernatural connection that happens when we make it, and it's the intention. When you get on the group tool and you're looking for a group, he's in it with you. He'll guide you. It may not be the perfect experience the first time. It may take another time to find your people. But when you find your people who get you and you can release love to and they love you back, It does help in the healing. It's not the same. It's not going to replace the person that you lost, but it's a new element and a new part of your new identity, and he'll be in it with you. And so as we wrap up, we just want to encourage you to, through Psalm 62, verse 8, that says, trust him in all times, you people. Pour out your hearts to him, for God is our refuge. That's something that you can count on. We need refuge in grief. We need a place to rest and hide and be comforted and for to be authentic with God. And from that place, he will extend his hand and pull you into a new place. He'll take you by the hand and he'll lead you into community that's loving, that's giving, that's supportive, that you can rest in, be known and understood in a way that's different. So we just bless you with that in the name of Jesus.
Friends, thank you so much for joining us as we explore these feelings and emotions that come up with grief. And I would encourage you to just notice where your loneliness is peaking. Notice what's coming and sitting heavy on your heart. And as you finish this episode, simply place it in God's trusting hands. Give it to God. You don't have to have the answers. Bring it to God and he will give you what you need, whether it's community, whether it's resources, whether it's encouragement. Thanks for being with us today.
Surviving Grief is a production of Crossroads Church, Cincinnati, Ohio. If you'd like to connect or share your own story, reach out to us at podcasts@crossroads.net. That's podcasts with an S at crossroads.net. We'll see you next time.